Hello, welcome at De Andere Krant. Today we have a very special guest, the investigative journalist Corrie Lynn. She has made a major discovery. Since 1946, hundreds of organizations have been provided with diplomatic immunity, meaning that they are operating completely outside of the law. There are no courts that can claim jurisdiction over their actions. Many of these organizations happen to be either key players or major profiteers from the COVID era. To understand how this works and what it implies, Corrie Lynn shares everything that she has discovered. Corrie, welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Good. So to start with a very simple question, what does it mean, diplomatic immunity?
Oh, gosh. Well, I wouldn't say it's a simple question. These organizations, which also are several banks, are getting what equates to diplomatic immunity, which means they don't fall under any jurisdiction in a court of law. They operate outside the law, right? They're free from being prosecuted because everything happens internally, including their own audits. They have privileges that allow them to travel without going through customs and fingerprints. All of their documentation is inviolable. They can't have their assets seized. I mean, there's a whole list we can go through of what these immunities entail for these organizations. Mm-hmm. It's pretty staggering.
But that's big. So I was already aware of the Vatican and City of London, BISPAC and Gavi, that they had such a status, but now you found out that there are hundreds of them. So how were they able to get this status? Because, yeah, it's so big. Basically, they're like, we think that countries are sovereign, but these are institutions.
Right. So, gosh, where to begin? So we have two different sections here. Okay. I'll go with the international organizations. There's 76 of them that mm-hmm. have been given immunities, privileges, and tax exemptions dating back to 1946 is when they were started doling them out. But during World War II in 1945 is when they got together and said, you know, while we're creating the UN, we really need to create some immunities because, after all, we're doing this for global world peace. So certain international organizations need to have the same status as diplomats so that they can operate and function without any interference or distraction, and they can travel from country to country. And so let's just, you know, create the UN, immediately give them immunity, as well as, you know, FAO and a handful of other organizations. And then from there, we'll keep rolling them out. So literally, so now this is through the US. It's called the International Organizations Immunities Act. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it authorized the president, whoever happens to be president at the time, to designate these organizations with these immunities through executive order. Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine. So all the way up through President Obama, I think Trump and Biden are the only ones who have not added additional organizations to this. Mm-hmm. So this started with Truman. But then in addition to that, so I have the list in my report, but mm-hmm. basically every arm of the UN, including the five branches of the World Bank, OAS and many of their arms, and you go through and you look at this and you're going, oh my gosh, you got the telecommunications, mm-hmm. you got the fertilizer, the agriculture, the food, the postal, basically everything you need to run a world outside of a system of law mm-hmm. where nothing's transparent, no one's accountable, all the way down to their personnel, and in many cases, their families and their mm-hmm. homes. It's unbelievable. But then at the same time, you've got 13 financial institutions and banks in that list of 76. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, you've got BIS, the Bank for International Settlements, with their own sovereign immunities, which they state on their site extends to those who are working for and with BIS. And they've, of course, got insurers, and they have many, you know, central banks. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, Catherine Austin Fitz and John Titus and Joseph Farrell, they've all covered that pretty extensively on that end, on the banking end of it. And mm-hmm. so but in addition to this, in addition to the International Organizations Immunities Act, you know, other countries then ratify this as well. And then they've got charters, they've got treaties, and they've got headquarters agreements, mm-hmm. which gives them more layers of protection on top of that. So we have an entire network operating outside the law, and people wonder why we can't get anywhere, why we can't go after these people. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned Gavi.
Yes.
So Gavi, Big Pharma, CERN, the Global Fund, they're all part of this as well. Now, under the International Organization of Immunities Act, Gavi and the Global Fund are included, but it's a rather interesting history with Gavi and how that came about, because most people just say Gavi, that's Bill Gates, but it was actually founded in 2000 along with UNICEF, the World Bank Group, and the WHO. They're all listed as partners. And so UNICEF, which is the United Nations Children's Fund, they were hosting them, which extended UNICEF's immunities and privileges to Gavi. So then as soon as UNICEF stopped hosting Gavi, they became a foundation, an international institution under Swiss law, and then were given privileges and immunities in Switzerland so that they were covered. And what's really crazy is in 2019, the U.S. created the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation, which was to help finance the private sector in like healthcare and telecommunications and energy. And then Gavi partnered with them, and that is where COVAX comes from. I'm sure you've heard of COVAX, the rapid financing facility where they were producing the COVID jabs for the world.
Uh-huh.
So it's also really
through this network.
What's that?
Also through this network. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Right. And then the World Bank, you know, there, who also, of course, has their immunities and privileges, is Gavi's trustee. They manage their finances and they hold seats on the board. So this is a very incestuous group. And then we have the Global Fund, mm-hmm. which I reported on a few years back with its connection to the giant HIV/AIDS slush fund. And they also have immunities and also established as a foundation under Swiss law. And so then we, of course, have Big Pharma, which mm-hmm. has immunities when it comes to jab, the vaccines, you know, mm-hmm. all vaccines. And so when people look at this and they go, well, why can't we, you know, fight these people? Why can't we sue? Why can't we, you know, all of the people behind the COVID jabs, and this is just one example, one agenda,
mm-hmm.
can't be held accountable. Not only can they not be held accountable, but they're completely inviolable. You can't seize their assets, their property, their documents. So anything they say on their websites, they're, you mm-hmm. know, you have no idea what's true and what's not true. And the money just circulates among all of them. And then what you have is on top of these 76 organizations, you've got thousands of NGOs that work with them or under them. And in some cases, these immunities then extend to them, and you'll have NDAs. And I'm going to be getting into some of that in part two, which I'm working on now. Mm-hmm. So it just keeps going and going. And this is the control framework for the future New World Order rulers, where you've got your bankers, which of course BIS and the bankers sit at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the UN and the World Bank and OAS and all of these other organizations underneath. And then you've got your NGOs underneath there.
Yes.
So it's a heck of a system they have put in place dating back to 1946.
Yes, because I thought that was interesting too, how far back this goes. And it's been operating already.
Oh yeah, for a long time. And so I had put together just some key timeline points for reference.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, so the Federal Reserve was created December 23rd in 1913. Mm-hmm. And then in 1930, the Bank for International Settlements was founded. In 1936, the Hague Convention expanded BIS's immunities. Mm-hmm. 1944 is when the World Bank, which, then was the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, was founded. And here's where it gets interesting. So on December 27th of 1945, 11 European countries signed the International Bank of Reconstruction and Development Articles of Agreement. 2 days later is when the U.S. signed the International Organization Immunities Act into law. And then it was the following February in 1946 when Truman started dishing them out. And so then you fast forward to 1994 and the first BIS board meeting after the Federal Reserve had purchased shares in the BIS system is what kicked off the central bank system on a global scale. And in over here in 97 is when, money started going missing from the Department of Defense and Department of Housing and Urban Development to the tune of like 21 trillion, which it's probably way more than that by now.
Mm-hmm.
And also interesting is September 10th in 2000, so a year before 9/11, BIS sent a note to its registered shareholders informing them that BIS's decision to the new restriction on the right to hold shares in the BIS is exclusively to central banks, which included details about the mandatory repurchase of all shares and the amendments of BIS's status and that were about to be, adopted, which then took place January 8th, 2001. So I find that very, very interesting.
Yes.
And then in 2002, they created a subsidiary called the International Association of Deposit Insurers, which, of course, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is a member, along with 91 other deposit insurers, and the U.S. Treasury, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank. They're all partners of this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is massive. I mean, this is a ginormous control framework that has been very carefully planned out for decades. And I feel like there's not enough eyes on this. Not enough people are seeing this. And there's a lot of battles and distractions being fought whereby if these immunities could be revoked, then that would change everything. I mean, they did this under the guise of we need to have these immunities in order to form world peace, in order to, give these organizations this freedom to be able to do what they need to do and without interference. And And yet, here we are decades later, and they were still giving these out all the way up through Obama.
But so, still, the first argument doesn't make a lot of sense. Because if you say you have a Westphalian system of nation states and they have decent interactions, then you can have agreements about travel of diplomats. And they don't have need to have immunity.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable the immunities that they have and the tax exemptions as well. It's... I can go through a few of those if you want. I just kind of did like a cliff note bullet point of the key ones. And again, this does not include your headquarters agreements that these organizations have, which give them more layers. And then there's treaties in addition on with some of these that give them even more layers of protection. So I'll go through the bullet points. We've got international organizations, their property and their assets, wherever located and by whomsoever held, shall enjoy the same immunity from suit and every form of judicial process as is enjoyed by foreign governments, unless the organization waives their immunity, which no organization has done to date that I have found. And why would they? And then we have immunity from search and seizure of property and assets, wherever located and by whomsoever held. Archives are inviolable. Exemption from property taxes, internal revenue taxes, communication taxes, taxes on transportation of persons or property, custom duties and taxes. Admission of officers and employees and their family members without checks from customs. And, you know, when you think about the time we're in right now, that in itself is a little scary.
Yes.
Officers and employees are exempt from legal suits or any other legal action in regards to activities related to work. Employees are exempt from income tax if they are not U.S. citizens or are both a U.S. citizen and a citizen of the Commonwealth of the Philippines. Officers and employees of the international organization and members of their immediate families other than nationals of the U.S. require no alien registration or fingerprinting or foreign, registration of foreign agents. Now, they say in there that in early on, they said that the president has the right, so the president can you know, do this by executive order. He can... give this designation out. And the president also has the right to revoke it. And that the Secretary of State also has the right to revoke either the continued presence of a person from an international organization into the U.S. or the, you know, withdraw the privileges and immunities of the entire organization itself. I have not found one that has been revoked. To date, the only time it's been revoked was when, you know, the organization was no longer in existence. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple where they had like limited immunities. They didn't have the full blown like everyone else did, but that was just a couple of the organizations. And then there were actually a few where they were given additional immunities on top of that, which I'll get into more of that in part two.
So if we want to revoke these immunities, does it need to happen through the U.S. because they had this first initial act, or can other countries also say we're not recognizing your sovereign immunity?
Well, so that's the thing. So this particular act could be. I'm not 100% sure. I would think that Congress could do some, you know, a vote on this and say, hey, we need to revoke this act in the U.S. There's no reason this should still stand today, or at least reduce these immunities and privileges down to something that's realistic. But how that carries over then gets a little crazy because, other countries you know, see this, recognize it, agree to this as well. Mm-hmm. And so it gets really, really complex, which is why I say then you have the headquarters agreements and these treaties, which is kind of like another layer of protection for them.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of them have treaties. Obviously, you know, we've got the UN is just protected to the hilt. So it's a complex network, but I do believe that we could start breaking it down and revoking some of this. And then, you know, transparency, they wouldn't be able to. Right now, we already know the laundering of money that's going on, and it's channeling mm-hmm. through these organizations and through the NGOs that are working with them and through these banks that are all connected in there. So,
mm-hmm. Was there also extension from the UN to the World Economic Forum? Did you see that?
You know, I did not. I did not specifically see any kind of a document of agreement that shows that there's an extension there, but the WEF is kind of like an arm of the UN, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
So if that's the case, then it, you know, whereas it may not be listed specifically under all of these UN arms, it's a forum, it's a meeting grounds for them. So it's probably protected.
Yes, I would assume so. So just if I understand it correctly, so many of our governments are funneling our tax money to these institutions. Mm-hmm. And these institutions are not just like, they're completely operating outside the law. And that's not that you can, like we saw so many of these lawsuits where you take somebody to court and you think the courts are corrupt. But in this case, there's not even a court you can take them to.
Right. And yeah. I do have a couple examples of that I'm going to put in part two that failed, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty crazy, though, because one of them was a company against the IFC, and they were trying to break the barrier of this whole immunities situation and you know, giving their argument for why this shouldn't hold up. And initially this had gone up the chain of courts. And I'm trying to remember if this went up to the Supreme Court. I believe it did. And they agreed. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is actually, they're going to beat this. But then it was remanded back down to the lower court and they did not agree.
Mm-hmm.
So which they should with the higher court, but see, and that's where it gets hairy because I'm not a lawyer, but needless to say, they ultimately did not beat it. So yeah, I mean, you know, it says that they enjoy the same immunity from suit in every form of judicial process as is enjoyed by foreign governments.
So if I take that to the current time, like Catherine Austin Fitz has called what is happening in the last 3 years, the going direct reset, which mm-hmm. is basically a coup of the central bankers. And if I understand it correctly, like a lot of the small, medium enterprises, like the entrepreneurial class, they were left to sit at home and went bankrupt, and a lot of money was printed and all their assets were bought up. But if I add your piece of research to that, these assets were moved to this area that is completely unaccountable and you cannot take to court. So they didn't just steal it, but they also took it out of the jurisdiction.
Right, right. And we see this with, you know, with the whole HIV/AIDS massive slush fund for decades there, all running through different arms of the UN and the Global Fund and Gavi and like all of the ones that have immunity. So time and time again, I see just organizations and arguments made against, well, we need to take that person to court. And I'm like, yeah, except for they're working with the World Bank and they have immunity. Or, you know, good. No, they have immunity. And there's so many arms to this. So I had started pulling together some research on IRENA, and I don't have that pulled up right now, but Edge, who is a brilliant researcher and writer who publishes on my site on Corey's Digs, I asked her, I said, can I send you some of my notes on IRENA? Can you dig deeper and write this up? Because they're one of the ones that have immunity, and they're kind of like the big gathering. They kind of remind me of the WEF, but they're like specific for climate change. And so there's a lot funneling through IRENA. And so she did a great report on here on that. And there's other organizations in here that I still need to write up about as well in separate shorter articles.
Well, if I saw the if I looked at the list and kind of like roughly had to lump it together, then I would say it's UN organizations, it's the banks, but a lot of environmental organizations. I thought that was interesting because, you know, I used to be a sustainability consultant, but until I recognized the kind of like there's a bigger agenda behind it that's not about really caring about the planet, but owning it. And with these environmental organizations, look, the environment, those are real assets. So they're bringing also the real assets, land, water, all under the UN. Basically, it becomes a trust then.
I mean, we've got, you know, the OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. They're a big player. We've got, agriculture and food, of course, FAO. In fact, FAO was one of the first ones to get immunity. So what does that tell you?
And even
the Tropical Tuna Commission and the Pacific Halibut Commission. I mean, we've got the Waters, the Great Lakes Fishery Commission. That's what I'm saying when you look at this and you go, oh gosh, okay, we got the European Space Agency and we've got, you know, the postal and the labor, and they pretty much cover our major industries to survive. Yes. And so I look at this and I just, you know, I put the list together in order of when they received their immunities, but I also listed their founding date and their headquarters and the EO numbers just to kind of give full perspective for people and other researchers. But by the time I got done with this list, I'm looking at it, I'm going, oh my gosh, these are the future puppet masters. Like if we let this continue, you know, with BIS and the central banks at the helm, and it's pretty crazy.
Yes, it is. So did you also come across, because I was wondering about that, so you see all the banks and I think, okay, so these are the CBDC players, but to get the CBDC, the system in order, you need massive surveillance and you need to track and own all this data. Are there also, what role does big tech play in this? Or are these, basically the servers with all the data, who owns them? And is it outside of the system or in the system?
Well, I can tell you that in part two, I'm going to show some actual agreements and contracts I found in relation to one of the organizations whereby the immunities are extending to them. And it is big tech. That's interesting though. I got my wheels going because I'm thinking through the banks. See the bank part, I haven't done a deep dive into BIS and the central banks outside of reviewing what's available to everyone right on their website, where they state they operate with sovereign immunity. And on their website, they say that some of these immunities not only extend to BIS members under specific activities, but also extend to systemically important institutions. Mm-hmm. So that's likely to be the insurers and payment systems. And they have, you know, 63 member banks and monetary authorities, plus their subsidiary members that are under the International Association of Deposit Insurance. So when we think of like payment systems and whatnot, I don't know. There very well could be a whole bunch of tech companies that this could potentially extend to. Okay. But I know of a few that most definitely it does through not through a bank, but through one of these other organizations. So yeah, and you think of all the NGOs that work with and through the UN.
Yes.
And how these might extend to them. It's scary.
So how did you see this network? Like, what was their major role during the last three years? Like, what were, like, if you, there's a laundry list of organizations, but who were like really the main players?
Oh gosh. Well, a lot's happened in the last few years. Are you talking specific to COVID, or are you talking about all the money that they're just printing off and stealing and massive siphoning and transfer of money and everything? So I would say the banks are definitely playing a big role here, as well as the Federal Reserve. But then you've got your big pharma and Gavi and the Global Fund and the World Bank and COVAX and all these organizations that are pushing, you know, and Pfizer and Moderna that are pushing the jabs. They all have immunity. So,
yeah, and then that's important, because I think a lot of people, when they hear immunity, they think about the contract. So in the contract, there's immunity, but you can take the contract to the court. And then if you have a lawyer, a judge with a spine, then perhaps he or she says, well, this is unconstitutional. But here the immunity is there is no court.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No judicial process.
At all.
These guys, man, I'm telling you, their playbooks, they're smart.
Well, and it goes a long way back, because it's even like, if like the deeper you dive into COVID, then you see that the big preparation started at least since 2000. But if you look at this goes, almost 100 years back.
Oh, yeah. And well beyond that. I mean, this has been going on forever with the globalists trying to rule the world. But, you know, during World War II, and the creation of the UN was pretty much their mark on getting a control framework in place to be able to operate outside the law and get away with everything they've been getting away with for decades now, you know. And also, just as a little side note, you look at the UN's like special envoys. Well, we had Bill Clinton, we had George H.W. Bush, we've had Michael Bloomberg, we've had a whole bunch of characters. Well, guess what? If you're working as a special envoy, you have complete immunity and privileges. So when Bill Clinton was in Haiti,
So yeah. What do you recommend that people can do? Like, I think it's important that more people are aware how this really works, because a lot of work has been done on like who the players are and who did what, and the World Health Organization and the World Economic Forum. But this, I really believe, gives so much insight in how the current global governance system actually works and how this has been organized. And also, like, because for a lot of people, I think it's still separate. Like, COVID was kind of a disease or a health emergency and with financial consequences. But here you see kind of these banks and let's say health, air quotes, organizations working hand in glove. It really shows how it all operates together. So I think it's really big what you discovered. But I'll get back to my question. So what do you think we can do?
Oh gosh, there's so many things that we can do that may feel like they're small, but when you've got lots and lots of people doing it, it adds up quickly. So I'm just sitting here thinking of all these different organizations, and you start with FAO, right? The mm-hmm. And you've done extensive work, as have I, in the food industry. And what's going on. And FAO obviously is one of the creators of the Codex Alimentarius, who sets all the food standards. So pay attention to support your farmers, and you support your local grocers, your smaller grocers. Pay attention to who these big chains are, who's like Kroger, Safeway, my God, they're just all teaming up to monopolize the food industry. Like, you almost have to break it down by industry. And then you got tech. Don't be, you know, there's so many things. I did an article a few years back on loosening your big tech's grip on you, and not supporting them, not funding them, not using their apps, not allowing them to aggregate your data. And I had a ton of little tips in there. But also, even with software, like, ditch Microsoft. I use LibreOffice, open source. Same thing with Adobe. I mean, there's so much good open source out there that people can be using instead of giving up access and giving up their privacy. They use our data to weaponize against us. Obviously, cash. I use cash as much as possible. Get out of the big banks. There's so many things when you start breaking it down by industry that we can do to fight back. One of the biggest things, obviously, is raise awareness. And we need to keep building these other systems that kind of operate out, kind of like what they did, except for we're having to operate within the laws, but creating our other systems, because these people are operating completely outside of the law. But yes. Getting this information out to as many people as possible, so they understand that this is the control framework. This is how they're able to do what they do. And we need to get legislators to revoke these immunities and privileges and declare, you know, their state to be sovereign, and they're not going to go along with the UN and the WHO and their pandemic treaty and all the stuff they have in store for us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, and how do you think we can get our assets back? Because they looted a lot.
Assets as in money that they've transferred out, or... I mean, when you say assets, I think, gosh, a lot of people have had their properties stolen through fraud and all kinds of stuff, too.
Because that's what I mean. Like, yeah, if you bankrupt all those people and they bought, like, Bill Gates is now the largest. He's obviously not just one man. He's kind of an operator for them.
Oh, yeah.
If they say that he's the U.S. largest landowner, then that land is in this extrajudicial system. So how do you get the land back?
Oh, boy. You're asking me? I think you need to get, like, a financial person and a lawyer and a tax person on. I don't know. I don't know. But one thing I will say is there's... You know, I remember, like, a year ago, I started looking up farms in the U.S. and seeing if sales were increasing and how many small farms versus the bigger farms and who's buying up what. And I understand people get into situations where they're flat broke, they have to sell, you know, they're going to take what comes. But I just wish people would do a little research into who it is that's buying their land before they sell it, because it's allowing them to further, you know, like, we've seen them go in and buy up housing and convert it to rentals. They don't want us owning anything. So,
well, this is rentals with smart meters and everything, IoT, yeah, and like complete surveillance homes.
Right. Right. People need to stop buying those darn Nest thermostats and Ring doorbells and, my goodness.
But it's so convenient.
The thing is if we stop feeding the beast, we can starve it. And if we stop, you know, they want things to trend. And if they can't sell what they're putting out, guess what? They have to reverse course. They're not going to allow themselves to go bankrupt in any one industry because they need to maintain that control. So they're going to switch to a different agenda and a different agenda and a different agenda. And people need to just not comply and not support.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot more power than people realize. You know, it's like you've done a lot of reporting on the lab grown meat. No one wants that crap. No one's going to buy that. That's not going to go anywhere. And we'll talk about that on my podcast when I have you on.
No.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, first bankrupt the farmers, and then if your children are starving, then they say you can have a CBDC and we'll give you some food.
I know. It's terrible what they're doing. And that's why awareness needs to continue, you know, getting this information out, because there are still a lot of people that don't see the bigger picture. They don't understand what's really going on, and they're buying into this climate crap, which you and I know sits at the helm of all of this. For all their reasoning and all their excuses, it's climate this, climate that, safety, convenience, and we'll protect you. And people are buying into it. And in the meantime, they're throwing their own farmers under the bus who feed them.
Yes. So raise awareness, spread the word about this, how this is actually operating, and we're so much more powerful than we think we are, and we can show it by not complying.
Right, and not supporting them, not funding them. I can't tell you how many times I've seen, like on social media, where I would post something, or I would just see something, and I'd be looking at the comments, and it would be, you know, about some new big thing that Amazon's doing. And someone will chime in and say, you know, I just bought a bunch of stocks in that because I'm going to make money off of these evil bastards. And then I'm going to get out. And no, you're funding them to build our control grid. You know, like people need to think in big picture. It's not, well, let's fund them so I can make some money off them and then I'll get out.
Uh-huh.
It's not how it works.
So it's really spending your money and your time and your data like in the sources that kind of align with you ethically, and when right. You know it's evil, that you need to cut it out.
Right. And you know, I understand it's not an easy thing, and it's not something you can do overnight. I mean, if you were to put together a checklist of all the things we can do or should do, it's time consuming. It's time, you know, getting your stuff out of a bigger bank and moving your accounts and changing all that information over, you know, that takes time. That's just one thing you can do, and a very important one. All these other little things, you know, just going to the store and using the, sorry, is that my phone? I don't know why I have it muted. I'm not sure how that's still going off. I'm sorry. But when you go to the store and they have these programs like, oh, you scan the QR code. No, that's what's built up the QR code as something simple, easy, and convenient to use, which they want to then use, you know, with the vaccine ID passports and getting you on the blockchain and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then also they'll say, you know, enter your phone number or scan your little card at Walgreens or some other store and you'll get a discount. Well, is alerting them to your location and every single thing you're spending money on worth that 50 cents you just saved. It's not to me. I won't do it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a ton of little things like this that really add up, and it causes a certain area or industry to say, wow, this really just isn't working. This isn't flying. People aren't buying into this. So we need to switch gears. We're going to have to just stop this. You know, we saw it with airlines. We're taking a massive hit when they kept pushing about the jabs and the masks, and they eventually had to reverse course on that and say, well, we're going to go under if we don't let people board this plane.
Yes. So non-compliance works, basically.
Oh, yeah.
But more people need to start doing it.
Right. Right. It's very important.
Good. So I think we covered a lot for the first time. I think there's much more to tell, but it's a good first start. Is there anything that you would like to add that we did not cover yet?
I think we covered the bulk of it. Like I said, I'm working on part two, which is going to get into more detail on all of this, and I'm going to have some contracts and newspaper clippings and all kinds of goodies in there. Some really, really important information on the history of this and a whole other organization that doesn't seem to ever make it into headlines, that people never talk about, that actually has a lot of power, that okay. has immunity. So that's going to be coming in part two. That's taking me a bit to do.
Well, it's a lot of work, but I'm very much looking forward to that.
Thank you.
So thank you for joining the Andere Kant and explain your work. I think it's really important, and have a very good evening.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Elsa.
Of course, anytime.
All right. Take care.
Take care.